Welcome to Two Peas in a Pod, the podcast designed for parents on the go.
I'm Dr. Julie Cardos.
And I'm Dr. Naylene Lai.
We're two board-certified pediatricians and parents like you.
Don't have the time or the energy to read pediatric advice?
If you're in the carpool line, trying to grab some exercise, or cleaning the house,
plug us in. Today's topic are things that go bump in the night.
So basically, we're going to talk about the child who sleeps in a bed and what can happen in the middle of the night, meaning nightmares, night terrors, bedwetting, or just the nighttime visitor.
All right. So it's a new world once you leave your crib. Dr. Cardos, when do you usually advise parents to take their kids out of the crib?
Well, basically, Dr. Lai, there's a couple answers. One is when the parents need the crib. So often there's a second child that's coming and you need the crib for the infant. But children can sleep in a bed anywhere, you know, sometimes it's 18 months, sometimes it's 2 years or 3 years or even 4 years if they're comfortable in the crib and don't want to leave it.
Yeah. One thing you can do is start with a mattress on the floor. Some of these beautiful new beds are actually pretty high off the ground. So there's no reason you couldn't just throw a mattress on the ground. A lot of people, what they like to do is if they have a mattress for a bed, they'll put it on the floor and the kid can start out there taking naps, getting kind of used to it. Other people will actually take the crib mattress if you don't need your crib and use that for a little while on the floor.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter. If you have a bed that's already set up, you buy those bars that prevent the kids from rolling out of the bed. But I think it's just as easy to put the mattress right on the floor. I agree with that.
One thing you have to do, though, is safety-proof your whole room, especially drawers. If you have a climber, you have to be careful that nobody's pulling out the drawers, stepping on the drawer, and then toppling the whole bureau onto their head.
Exactly. And that's always the risk of the younger child who comes out of the crib early, either because of a new sibling coming or because they can climb out of their crib. I mean, I think if they can climb out of the crib, you might as well put them in a bed. But it is not mean to gate your child in their room. I don't think I would lock the door and lock them in their room, but you do need to put a gate up so that in case they wake up and you don't hear them, they're not in your house getting into trouble.
And certainly you need gates at the top of the stairs because you do not know where they will be wandering.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, though, they wander into your room. Mm-hmm. So what do you do when the kid wanders into your room?
Yeah, and it's always funny. Sometimes you wake up and there they are, and other times they're in your bed asleep, and other times they're just staring at you until you wake up. Remember, there's not that many reasons that children actually wake up in the middle of the night. One that you can't forget about is a full bladder. Some kids wake up, even if they're still in, you know, not even fully toilet trained at night, sometimes they do wake up when they have to go to the bathroom. So remember to walk them into the bathroom before you walk them back to their bed. You know, other reasons that kids will wake up, they might have had a bad dream. They might just need to know where you are. And once they see where you are, they're okay to go back. But I think that the key, that the advice that I always give is walk them back to their bed.
Yeah, keep that up. Sometimes, unfortunately, you have a child that will come and stare at you and will be walked back every single night. One thing you can do is put in their head that tonight, before they go to bed, tonight's the night that you'll sleep in your bed the whole night long. Because if you remind them early on, make sure you get them to the potty before bed, they may subconsciously remember this.
Right, there's always a chance.
So, creative ways to get them back to sleeping in their own bed. One of my favorites is a family that told me that they started out with a little mattress for the kid in the parents' bedroom. And what they would do is every single night they would inch this mattress closer and closer and closer
to the door
and closer to the kid's bedroom. And I said to the family, does that mean they were sleeping in the hall at some point? And they said, oh, yes. But it definitely worked. So basically, you can do a variation of that. A lot of people will, because as they get older, they will kick you in the head. They will be upside down. Yeah. It's actually pretty injurious on your part. Is they will have a sleeping bag on the floor, and if the child comes into the room at the night, they know just to flop down on the sleeping bag because all they want is a reassurance that you're there.
Right, and you know, for the parents who don't mind that their children start out in their bed and end up in the parents' bed, if the parents don't mind, it's not a problem for me. But I think at some point, most most parents would like their children out of their bed and into their own bed and into their own room, and that's an appropriate place for sleeping. So some of the complications that happen, even starting in toddlers, toddlers have nightmares, just like adults do, and nightmares usually happen in the later part of the evening, usually after the child's been asleep, you know, for at least 3 or 4 hours. And nightmares happen in a light phase of sleep, which is why you tend to wake up still shouting from a nightmare. And it's also why when you run into the child's room, if you hear them screaming, or they come into your room, they are wide awake. They are completely aware of their surroundings, and they are definitely comforted by your presence. So the way to handle a child with a nightmare is to stay with them until they're not afraid. But I would still walk them back to their bed and then sit with them. Some triggers of nightmares can be late night TV, or even the radio, depending on what they're listening to. So I'll definitely avoid the screen for at least an hour before bedtime.
So anything that revs up your brain, in other words.
You want to have a nice soothing bedtime routine and don't talk about scary things or stressful things right before bed. And the other thing about nightmares is that's not the time to have a huge discussion, because the middle of the night, it's okay to comfort them, but you don't need to go into great detail hearing about this nightmare. You can wait till the daytime, because the children usually remember their nightmares. And so you can talk about scary things in the day when it's light and try to get that fear out.
Right. And this is a different issue than the night terrors. Night terrors occur in toddlerhood. That is actually happening in a very, very deep stage of sleep. I like to call it basically kid sleepwalking. These kids are not awake, and what happens is they look like they're having a temper tantrum, full-blown temper tantrum in the middle of the night, and they're actually not quite awake. I remember once looking at one of my own kids having a fit on the floor and thinking to myself, gosh, how in the world am I going to distinguish between this and something serious, like serious abdominal pain or an awful illness like a meningitis or something like that? And I realized that with things that truly cause pain, if you have a broken leg or if you have anything else, you are still and you're whimpering. The last thing you're doing is flailing around on the floor.
That's true. That's a good way to distinguish. And remember, night terrors also do happen after a child's been asleep for a couple hours, but they tend to happen in the first half of the night as opposed to the later half of the night. So if you're not sure what's going on, that's one way you can tell. And the other way you can tell is they don't really know that you're there. So you go in, you think, oh my gosh, you hear this yelling, you go in and you try to comfort your child and you make it worse.
Right.
And that's a way to know that you're in a night terror and not a nightmare.
Right. And they do wake up, and it's actually okay. That's another fallacy. You know, you can wake up a sleepwalker, just like a night terror. And that's one way to stop it at that point is to get out a towel and wash their face a little bit, walk them around a little bit. And at the point that they start to recognize you and they're able to be comforted is the point that they're actually waking up.
Right. And then it's easier to get them back to sleep.
Right.
Another option for night terrors, some kids have them, but they don't last that long. And again, you go in and you feel frustrated because they don't seem to be calmed by you being there. Sometimes they actually get more thrashing around when you're in the room. And so for that, I just wouldn't stay in the room. Sometimes you don't have to stay in the room.
Right. The trouble with night terrors is they do tend to, unlike nightmares, they do tend to come on a regular basis.
Yes.
One strategy to combat them is to wake them up a half hour before you predict the night terror to happen. So it'll break them and prevent them from getting into that stage four very deep sleep that they occur in. It's hard to do that when it occurs at 1 o'clock every single night. Right. So what still works is if you go in and wake the child up right before you go to sleep.
Right. It's just anything that disrupts the sleep cycle might disrupt that whole night terror cycle. And yeah, that can definitely help the parents.
Also, avoiding things that put you into a very deep, disrupted sleep. For instance, giving Benadryl at night or diphenhydramine.
That's true. Some kids have a really goofy reaction to that medicine, and that can cause night terrors. One of my children had that. He had an allergy reaction, and we gave him Benadryl and sent him to sleep. And he had a night terror that lasted about a half hour, and I know it was the medicine.
Right, and also sleep deprivation. When you go to a late night party and the children are overtired, that almost guarantees you a night terror that night.
Exactly. And kids, remember, kids are not little adults, and it's in a grown-up person who's very tired, they often sleep better when they finally go to sleep. Children, if they go to bed overtired, do not sleep nearly as well. And that's true when they're infants all the way up through teenagehood. Something to keep in mind. So
let's move on to another part of
things that go bump in the night.
A bedwetter.
Yes, let's talk about bedwetting. So what are the normal stats? When parents ask you, what do you tell them? When is it normal for kids to be
dry? Yeah, I mean, in general, dryness at night comes way after potty training. Very few kids do both at the same time. 10% of children at 6 years old are still wetting the bed at night. There's a strong hereditary component, and often one parent was a bedwetter.
Yeah, and that's actually how I tell parents, you can predict how long your child's going to wet the bed. If a mom or a dad wet the bed till they were eight, and you can also often get that information from grandparents, then chances are your child's going to be eight before they're able to be dry. And it's nothing that the child has control over, unlike the daytime.
It happens in a heavy sleeper. You're a heavy sleeper and you will not wake up to cymbals being bashed next to your head, they're not going to wake up to a little tickle of the bladder.
Exactly. And also, I know there were some studies that show kids who do wet the bed, they just make more urine at night. There are kids who, most children at some point spontaneously make less urine and overnight than compared to the daytime. And these kids don't. So they're still making a normal amount of urine and they can't wake themselves up because they're good sleepers. So
what do you do about if you have a bedwetter and you're around 6 years old?
Okay, so the first thing is to ask the parent, who did the bedwetting bother more, the parent or the child? Because in general, with bedwetting, if the child doesn't care, like if they're okay with it, they're not upset about it, it doesn't hold them back from being happy, then just leave it alone and go ahead and put nighttime, absorbent, some kind of absorbent clothing or nighttime diapers or something on them so that you're not ruining your mattress. And make sure you have the waterproofing under the sheets, because until the child really cares about it, it's going to be very hard to do any kind of behavioral intervention. And there are some, they won't work if the child isn't motivated.
Right. When you do start anything, the best things that actually stick are behavioral modifications. No drinking after dinner time. You can also, when you go to bed, awaken the child. So a couple hours into their sleep cycle, you can awaken them and have them go to the potty at that point.
Mm-hmm. But remember, sometimes that works, but sometimes it doesn't. So the child won't remember being woken up, and they can still wet the bed later in the night. So the most tried and true behavior modification in the child who's motivated to stop wetting, and again, this tends to be, I find, closer to about 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old, are bedwetting alarms. And there are different systems out there, but the basic way that they all work is there's these sensors that can sense wetness, and so the child starts to urinate, and then they're interrupted by a buzz or a beep or a sound, and it wakens them just enough that their body stops urinating. And then that's the time you've got to be woken all the way up and walk to the bathroom to finish urinating, and then they go back to bed. And all of these alarm systems come with it's like a schedule on how to do it, and it's very straightforward, and you just follow, and you warn the family. This can take a few months. This is not an overnight fix. But that once you go through the program, 2 or 3 months later, the children are dry permanently at night.
But one thing to be very aware of, it is actually a very parent-intensive program.
Yes, if the whole family
has
to get
involved. Now, there is medication, too. It's actually a natural hormone that's produced in your body that we can give. Most children reserve it for sleepovers, that sort of thing.
Right.
Because, again, it's still medication.
Exactly. And the way the medicine works is it basically decreases the amount of urine your body makes for the 10 to 12 hours from the time you've taken the medicine. So, again, it doesn't cure the problem. It hides it. And occasionally, I've seen some pediatricians will use this medicine. If the child is so devastated they're still wet, they will put the children on this medication every night for, say, 3 months, and then stop it and see if the child had outgrown the problem. And if not, then they restart the medicine again. So if it's used correctly, it can be safe, and it can help the child's ego if they're starting to get low self-esteem from bedwetting.
Okay. So today we talked about things that go bump in the night.
And our sticky points today are, first of all, that nightmares versus night terrors. Nightmares tend to occur in light sleep and can be soothed by the parents and go back to sleep, whereas a night terror happens in a stage of very deep sleep. Sometimes are helped by parents being present, and sometimes are not, but that's how you can tell the difference between the two.
Bedwetters, they just simply don't awaken to the bladder. They often will outgrow this without any intervention at all.
And then it's really important that everybody has a good sleep routine at night, and that parents can help children create sleep patterns that maximize the amount of sleep that the children and the parents get.
So this concludes our episode of Two Peds in a Pod. I'm Dr. Naylene Lai.
And I'm Dr. Julie Cardos. And we are Two Peds in a Pod. Right now our recording studio is our kitchen table, so we depend on you to tell your friends about us.
We're two pediatrician moms who know that you have questions when you've left our office.
We hope to use these podcasts to answer some of those questions and make you more confident parents.
Please check out our website. It's Two Peds in a Pod. That's TWOPEDSINAPOD.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.